I had training periods where I wasn't taking any days off. It was just dumb. And that's why, my current coach basically said, once you start working with me, I'm going to help take some of the stupid out.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 234, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, before we dive into today's episode, I have a new sponsor to tell you about today, and I'm really excited to have the good folks from Knuckle Lights on board. What a great product. I've been interested and intrigued by Knuckle Lights for like 2 years now. If you go back like 2 years on the blog, I've started talking about them and thinking that this might be a great product. And we finally had the conversation, and they were excited to partner with me a little bit. And I've since gotten a pair of Knuckle Lights, and these things are dynamite. They're everything I thought they would be, and probably more. And the product is just like what it sounds. They're lights that fit over your hands. Very comfortable, not restrictive at all. You can still hold a dog leash. You can still hold a water bottle. I mean, you can still hold anything that you're going to hold in your hands. You can hold while you're wearing your Knuckle Lights, but they provide great light, great illumination if you're running before dark or after dark. And with daylight savings time approaching and fall here in the Northern Hemisphere, I mean, daylight's decreasing. So more often than not, we're going to be running at night. And having a light not only helps you see what's in front of you. Lord knows I've stepped into a pothole or tripped on a stick or things like that before when I've running in the dark. But also helps you to be seen by traffic. And that's a huge safety feature. So, their slogan is to see and be seen. And it's great. I've already witnessed both sides of the coin of seeing some type of impediment or possible, tripping hazard danger in front of me that I've been able to avoid while using my Knuckle Lights. And I've also seen the power of when a car maybe doesn't see you or there's backing out of the driveway, you kind of flash the light towards them. They see the light and they stop. And so it's been a safety thing too. So I'm super happy to have Knuckle Lights on board you. I'm going to talk about them again kind of halfway through the episode, but definitely would encourage you to check them out. Throw them on your Christmas list or really don't even wait till Christmas. Get them now. They're great, rechargeable. No, you don't have to worry about changing batteries. Great battery life as well. So knucklelights.com is the website for more information, but check it out. And now let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today I'm running with someone that is seemingly defying father time as he continues to improve and get faster with age. He ran his first marathon in 2000 and finished that race with a very respectable time of 4 hours and 15 minutes. His current PR, however, is a blazing 2:47:41, and he's not even content with that time as he is hoping to shave a few more minutes off of that PR at his next race a little bit later this year. He's competitive at virtually every race distance that he enters, regularly finishing at or near the top of his age group, and on more than one occasion, simply just winning the race outright. It'll be everything I can do today to keep up with him, but hopefully I'll be able to learn a few things from Keith Freeburn that will help me to continue to improve as a runner and reach some of the big goals that I have for my future. So with that, thanks for joining us today, Keith, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. The pleasure is definitely mine. And guys, if you want to connect with Keith and say hi and see what he's up to, Instagram and Twitter, same handle both places, and that's just his name, at Keith Freeburn. Simple, easy to find, and I'll have the links to that and anything else that makes sense to connect to from our conversation today in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/324. So Keith, the way we start off with the show is with a simple question that sometimes has a simple answer, and sometimes it is the complete opposite of a simple answer, but it just gives us a great place to start, and that is to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, my favorite distance, and you're right, it is a tough thing to think about because I love the mile, I love the marathon, but my favorite distance is the 5K, and I think the main reason is when I started to get competitive, maybe around 2010, 2011, the 5K is what got me into shape. It's also what I use to help predict my race times in other races. If I'm running, low 17s, I know pretty much where I'm going to be in the marathon, where I'm going to be in the half marathon. And it's such a simple, fast race, that it really is, to me, sort of that test that lets me know where I am fitness wise. Definitely the 5K.
Gotcha. I was
exciting.
Go ahead.
No, definitely. It's just an exciting race. You you get a little bit of endurance, but you're keeping it close to the red line the whole time,
And that's exactly the reason that I don't like the 5K is it just hurts from the beginning to the end. There's nothing. I mean, it's fun that, it's fun to race fast and be done, in 20-ish minutes or however long it takes you to get to the finish line. But man, it's just uncomfortable the entire race.
Yeah, it's all about trying to keep it at that uncomfortable level and just see what you can do at the finish. I have one friend who tells me, at the end of a race, your picture shouldn't look that great. You should almost look like you're crying because you're in so much pain trying to get to that finish line, just that effort level.
Yeah.
And that's the 5K.
Yeah, exactly. That's the 5K in a nutshell. One thing that you mentioned that I've kind of had I don't know that I've been outspoken, if that's quite the right word, but I've definitely made my opinion known with where I stand when it comes to using the 5K as a predictor for the marathon. And I really struggle with looking at, a 20-ish minute race and trying to extrapolate out how that's going to play out, multiplied by whatever it is to get to 26.2 miles. So since that seems to work for you and that seems to give you a good gauge of your fitness going into a marathon, I don't know exactly what my question is other than
I know where you're getting.
Yeah.
I think that if your marathon training is spot on and you've got the mileage in, you're following your coach's training plan, that's where the 5K is a better predictor. Mm. If you haven't done the training needed to run a faster marathon, or to even get through a full marathon without hitting the wall, I think it's less of a predictor. I think the 5K, in the middle of a training program is definitely, that's where it's been a better predictor for me. I'll give you an example. 2010, I believe it was 2010, I ran Steamtown. I ran a 3:31. And that was a huge PR for me. Mm. I was 170 some pounds, but then I went and ran. I met a friend who basically said I was stupid with the way I was training for the marathon. He says, you need to train for the 5K, get your 5K times faster. So I think I was around 20 and a half minutes, 21 minutes at the time for 5K. Within several months, I had dropped down to 145 pounds.
Wow.
And brought my 5K time March of 2011 down into the 17s. Like 1745. 2011, I run Rock and Roll Savannah. I believe it was 2011. I have to look at the dates, but I ran 2:50.07.
Wow.
And after that, I've been a big believer that looking at my 5K times, dropping that 5K, 2.5 minutes or so, almost 3 minutes, equal to 40 plus minute improvement in marathon time. And so a lot of times I'll look at that 5K as sort of a predictor, definitely not as good of a predictor as your half marathon time.
Right.
I think, two times your half marathon plus 10, that's almost been spot on, every time.
Mm.
That's definitely, to me, a better predictor, but I think the 5K is a good small predictor.
Gotcha. With in that time frame when you were when you made those big jumps and clearly a 2.5 to 3 minute jump in the 5K is I would say as impressive, if not maybe even more so impressive than a 35 or 40 minute jump in the marathon, depending on where you're. I guess where you're starting from, but in your case, they're both very, very impressive jumps. What was the focus in your training? What was it? a lot more speed work? Was it tempo type of runs, or what did you do to kind of bring that speed down so much?
It was a little bit of both. It's funny. I met this guy named Peter. He was in his 50s, and it was right before I ran Steamtown in that 3:31. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who basically said I was training the wrong way, needed to focus more on speed and get 5K times down. And after running Steamtown, I started training with him, and we would meet, because I've got kids, we would meet sometimes 9, 10 o'clock at night on local high school tracks. And our focus was 2 to 3 workouts a week, focusing on 5K speed, with some of the workouts, doing your 400s, your 800s, those kind of things. But mostly doing progression runs and tempos. Starting out at, back then 7:45 per mile, running 6 miles, where each mile we were, getting a little bit faster, until, eventually getting that last mile in at maybe, 5.5 minutes, 5:20, something like that. Just really trying to get that 5K speed to improve. And one of the things I immediately noticed was the weight loss. Mm-hmm. Fitness was much better, but also I wish I could have jumps in PR time like I had back then. I mean, it was amazing how the speed workouts and the tempos really, really helped.
During that time, are you still training in that way, where you're doing lots of hard workouts? Is that kind of the what your training looks like now?
Right now it does. It's funny. I was just talking to a friend about that. One of the things I got away from was some of these speed workouts, and started to really increase my distance, sometimes up to 90 miles per week. Trying to better that marathon time. And I've got a new coach, and I'm looking at what I'm doing, and it's very similar to what I was doing back then. Reduce the mileage, more rest days, but the intensity has really picked up. Doing more tempo runs, long runs that have speed workouts in the middle of them. Mm-hmm. Definitely more speed focused than I've been probably in the past 2 years.
How do you, with that being the case, and here's where I'm coming from, just so you're on kind of maybe follow my train of thought a little bit better. I talked to Matt Fitzgerald just a little over a year ago, and we talked about 80-20 running the idea of when you do your hard workouts, like, you hammer them and you do them hard, but the bulk of your training should be kind of in that easy-ish range, so that you're not beating yourself up as much and breaking down and whatnot. And it really changed the way that I train, and I'm really, a year out now of trying to follow that consistently, I'm really starting to notice, I think, some benefits and some changes. And it changes the way I coach. I mean, I try to coach a lot more with the runners that I work with to have some hard days and hammer them. But for the most part, a lot of runs to build the base and to not be hammering every workout, basically, for lack of a better way of saying it. How have you been able to hit those the frequency of higher intensity workouts without breaking down? Because I know that is something that. I mean, runners, we maybe have a bad rap for going hard and redlining, in training, until we break down, and then you're out for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever, and you recover, and now you're starting back from practically square one. So you're working hard again and repeat and repeat and repeat. So, how obviously you've progressed and continued to progress, and you're continuing to train hard. How have you balanced the recovery and the rest and the avoiding the injuries with so much high intensity training?
And that has been the hardest thing to do. And I think Fitzgerald's 80-20 is really definitely the way to go, but it is hard to get runners to slow down on those easy days. And that's been something hard for me to do, a true recovery run. I find myself thinking about racing and picking up the pace, but, I think having that one day off, I had training periods where I wasn't taking any days off. It was just dumb. And that's why, you know, my current coach basically said, once you start working with me, I'm going to help take some of the stupid out. And, you know, a lot of it has been really the workouts have been pretty good. I've been able to hit most of the workouts. It's when I'm out doing the recoveries, he's like, he'll send me messages too fast, slow down. You know, days off, you know, active rest, you know, walk or do something, but, you know, definitely take that day off. And it's amazing how I'm knocking on wood. I'm usually getting close to injury at this point in the training cycle. And this is the best I've felt. I start a run and you know how the first mile usually feels horrible,
right?
I mean, it still doesn't feel great, but I don't have the aches and pains I had when I was doing the 90-mile weeks, and I wasn't slowing down. But I still have I feel like I have the endurance and the speed that I had at the same time. So I really think that, yeah, having the rest and really slowing down when you're supposed to is really important, and you're still going to get the training effect.
Right. And again, I mean, like you said, it's a hard pill to swallow, but, and that's why I love to kind of ask those kind of probing questions to, you know, hear it from you that, you know, somebody else who's running way faster than me that on the days that you're supposed to run easy, you still need to do that. Like it's okay to go out and, you know, whatever your easy pace is, whether it's 8 minutes, whether it's 10 minutes, whether it's 15 minutes, you know, whether it's a run walk at 15 minute pace, like that's okay. Like that there's a benefit to that, to still get some fitness, but also to not beat your body up as much, so that on the days that you can go, that you're supposed to go hard, you can, and you get the maximum benefit from it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is if you think of it that way, where the easy days are just to get your body back to, you know, resting, recovery, and really the focus is on being able to hit your target during your workouts. The workouts are where you're going to, you know, get the speed, get the, you know, the endurance. And that's, you know, the important part. It was so hard for me to think that way. I felt like I had to go out and do these 7-8 mile runs that I did on a normal basis at, you know, like I've got to do this at 7 minutes per mile. You know, this next mile should be 6:50, when really, you know, the better thing to do is get out there, stay between 7.5 and 8 minutes per mile, you know, keep the heart rate down a little bit, keep the, you know, the turnover there, but just not trying to crank out the speed. And yeah, I'm feeling much better this cycle than I have in a long time with training for a marathon.
That's awesome. Hopefully that continues. What race are you training for? Is it Savannah again?
Yeah, Rock and Roll Savannah.
Gotcha. I've got a handful of my running buddies are going up there and doing that one. I'm skipping it, but they're heading up there for it. So
it's a great race.
Hopefully the weather will be more conducive than it was last year.
Oh yeah, last year was rough from what I heard. Yeah, the two times I've run it, 50 degrees at the start and perfect. So I'm hoping for that again this time around.
Yeah, and just for everybody that's not aware, last year they canceled the marathon. They just made it a half because it was so hot. It was, I don't remember what it was, like 80 something like that. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I think somebody passed away during the race and somebody passed away after the race. You know, just trying to run in that kind of heat for that distance, especially if you're not trained.
Right.
It's just so difficult.
Yeah.
Such a test.
Yeah, it really is. And it's the one thing that here in Central Florida that I kind of, as much as I don't like it to be hot all the time, I do appreciate that when you show up at a race that it's a little warmer than anticipated. You know, I've been training in it, so I'm okay. You know, I got that mental
prepared.
Boost. Yeah, definitely. Shifting gears a little bit, you know, racing versus running, which I feel like is something that maybe you're, you know, I mean, when you're finishing at the top of, you know, top 1, 2, 3 most of the time in your age group, obviously you're racing pretty hard. Has racing always been a thing for you, or, you know, was it kind of like as you got faster and got more competitive, you focused more on the racing aspect of running?
Yeah, it's funny. I think during that time where I started training for the 5K, my friend and I were signing up for 5Ks all the time, and it almost became an addiction. It was like having two runners high. You have your regular runner's high when you're out on a run, you know, you get to mile three or four and you just feel like that euphoria. That there's another excitement and high that comes from, you know, okay, I'm gonna try to line up at the front and telling yourself, you know, all right, my goal with this race is to win it. You know, you look around, you know, the local competition. So, you know, you see who's there and you try to figure out, you know, what you're going to do in the race. And there's definitely an excitement about it. And I think it just, you know, it's funny because that's one of the things I've had to back off with getting this new coach is he said, you're going to do some races, but we're going to back off. You were doing way too much right now. I feel like I have, you know, I'm missing my 5Ks. I really want to get out there and race a 5K, but I know, you know, with the training that I'm doing now, I better listen to the coach, you know? But yeah, there's an excitement to racing. We have a lot of series, race series up here in DC as well. You know, it's just kind of neat to see where you can place, who's going to be there and how you can, you know, how well you do against that competition.
Yeah. It's, we've got a really, I mean, just a great race scene, a great running community down here. And it's one of those things where, man, you know, some of these races, like you feel like you're in the best shape you've ever been in. And you're like, man, you know, like at best I'm going to finish, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th, 10th in my age group and, you know, 40, 50, 60th overall, just because, I mean, just people from, you know, the young kids, the high school athletes or the college kids or whatever to the masters. And we've got, you know, I mean, you're there too. You'd be one of them. You'd be one of those guys.
Those
masters athletes that are banging it out in 17, 18 minutes. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. The local racing scenes when they're, like you said, as competitive as they are, it does get exciting. You know, I had one 5K, Police Week 5K this year. I think there were a couple thousand people that ran it. And I'm up at the start line looking around, and I had no idea what to expect. I knew that I wasn't going to get first because I saw, you know, a guy from, you know, the Georgetown Running Club running around. You know, they're, you know, sponsored by Pacers and New Balance. And I was like, okay, so maybe second, you know, you kind of get up there and so, you know, you're still going to have to run as fast as you can and try to compete, but you also know, you know, okay, am I going for a Masters win? Because all the local, you know, younger guys are out, you know, to just crush this race or, you know, so you sort of adjust, but a lot of times you're still going to run the race, you know, the way you would, you know, any other way.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I mean, with a 5K, there's only so much strategy that can go in. Like you just, like you said earlier, you kind of get to that red line ish and hold it. And that's kind of the strategy.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you see some people that, you know, you're going to try to hang on and, you know, maybe kick at the finish. Mm-hmm. It never always works out as planned though. You always have this vision and then you get back to the finish. You're like, okay, that was nothing like what I thought I was going to do.
Exactly. What was it like the first time you were overall the winner of a race? Was it something that you expected going in or was it one of those that kind of like, holy cow, like I've got a shot at this thing.
It was a holy cow moment. Yeah. I mean, that'll still be one of the most memorable races of my life. It was just, I mean, one of those where you're super excited at the end, almost crying because you had no idea that it was possible. But it was at the Pacers, Parkway Classic 5K. They do a 10 miler and a 5K in April. And it's in Alexandria. It's where I went to high school. So it's, you know, there's some meaning to this area, you know, and it finishes in Old Town. And the race takes off and this guy takes off probably running about 5:20 pace. And I'm running with another group and we're probably in the 5:30s, 5:40s. And it's mostly uphill until you get to maybe about a mile to go. And then you have a sharp downhill a left turn on Union Street, which is a popular street in Old Town, and then you just have this straightaway for almost 1,200 meters where you can see the finish line, but it's so far away, you know. And what happened was he had a big gap on me. You take this sharp right turn and go down the steep hill, and I couldn't see him. Mm. My friends were up at they were doing the water stop for the 10 miler at the 9 mile mark for the 10 miler. So the 2 mile mm. mark for the 5K. Mm-hmm. And they're yelling at me, "Come on, man, you can pick it up." And I had already calculated that I was about 15 seconds behind, which is forever in a 5K.
Right, right. Especially at the front of the pack instead of, mid pack or backpack. Like that's a lot.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I had second place at that point to myself. But 15 seconds is huge. And so I just cranked as fast as I could down the hill, and I couldn't see the guy. And then as soon as I take the left turn onto Union, I can see the finish line, and I can see that this guy was much closer to me. Mm. And I'm going, "Oh my gosh, I'm dying, but I have a chance because, there's the finish line. It looks like he's slowed down some." So I just picked up the pace, tried to get closer to him. And then I did this way too soon, but maybe around 800 meters, 1,000 meters. I decided that if I'm going to go for it, I've got to go all out, and I've got to pass fast enough that it puts a little bit of shock into his mm-hmm. system. And I didn't know who he was. I didn't at the time. And, my goal was just get to that finish line as fast as I could. And I think it's one of the few times I ever got to the point where I was seen in almost black and white or in seeing stars. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if I had held on to that effort another 100 meters, I would have passed out.
Right.
I was able to get to the tape first, and it was just, it was a huge wow moment. I don't think I've ever run that hard at the end of a race since. And I've won some more races, but none of them have ever been as exciting as that. It was just, definitely a memorable race. And it's funny because the guy that I beat, Brad, is a good friend now. And I mean, he's a great runner, does triathlons, and we both went to the same high school. Mm. He's the cross country coach at that high school. So, it's kind of neat because we follow each other and cheer each other on. And, it was just a kind of a neat way to meet. And, that's the other cool thing about it is just all these races, the community, you have that competition, you want to beat that other person, but then when that other person's running other races, you're cheering them on,
Mm-hmm. Well, and shoot, and even right after the race, whether they beat you or not, it's like, man, great, great race. Like, that's one of the things I love most about running is just like, it can be competitive, but it doesn't have to be maliciously competitive.
Exactly. And that's the coolest thing about the running community is, everybody's definitely ultra competitive. You want to win, you definitely want to beat the other guy, but at the end of it, everybody's very friendly, talking about training. We all share that passion for the sport, and want to see our competitors do well, except for when we're in the same race.
Right. But sometimes if they're doing well, that helps you push it to another level too, and find another gear and so it can be beneficial too.
Oh, it does. It definitely does. Yeah. Really, really beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. Have you always had a sense of competitiveness, or is that something that's developed with your racing and running and finishing near the top of races as well?
I think I had it when I was younger. I competed in Olympic style Taekwondo in my late teens and early 20s. And you definitely learn to be competitive when you're in a full contact fighting sport. Running back then was more of a way of staying in shape for another sport. And, Taekwondo, it was, you're getting into a ring with somebody and your goal is to get to that next fight to see if you can, you know, win states or win nationals. Maybe, you know, both of my Taekwondo instructors went to the Olympics in 88. And I think that's something that they really helped me learn, was to be competitive and, you know, to have that drive to want to be, the best, you know, because they were pretty much the best at what they did. And it was, you know, I think I still have what I learned from them. I still have inside of me as a master's runner, you know.
Do you find yourself being competitive in areas outside of athletics and sport, or is that mostly compartmentalized to that part of your life?
Maybe a little bit in work life, but not as much as running. Yeah, I think running is where I sort of get it all out of my system so that I can try to be nicer when I'm, you know, the running shirt that says I run so that I don't kill people or whatever.
Right.
I think that, I mean, that's overkill, but it's, I think in a way it's kind of true. I think having this competitive thing on the side with running helps me stay more even keeled and, sort of less competitive, in the work environment and at home.
Gotcha. I want to get into goals a little bit, but first, got to pay a couple bills. Thanks to Knuckle Lights for sponsoring today's episode. Guys, you know, if you're like me and you're running early in the morning, or you're like Keith mentioned earlier, running late at night, you know, if you're on the track, maybe you're pretty safe and maybe well lit. But, you know, me running streets in the morning before the sun comes up, it's nice to be able to see. Not only to see what's in front of you, but to alert cars. Like just this morning, I was out with the dog and we were running through the neighborhood, and I saw a car backing out of the driveway, you know, guy getting ready to go to work or whatever, and just kind of flashed my lights towards him so he could actually see me. And I didn't have to dodge a car, which normally I dodge cars because I don't have the lights with me. So if you haven't checked out Knuckle Lights, they're super comfortable. They fit over your hands, super bright LED. I mean, they're fantastic. And with daylight savings time quickly approaching, it's going to be getting, you know, shorter and shorter hours of daylight. So definitely would encourage you to check out Knuckle Lights and, you know, maybe throw them on your Christmas list, or just get them for safety for that fact. And don't even wait till Christmas, get them now. But just head over to knucklelights.com and check it out. And, if you have any questions about them, please let me know. I've been using them and I love them, and I haven't ever been a headlamp guy. So it's not comfortable for me. But these things are great. It's not like carrying a flashlight. Like it just kind of straps over your hand. And you don't even really notice it's there. So check it out, knucklelights.com. And thanks to Knucklelights for being part of the show. Appreciate their support. So Keith, I got an email from you a couple days ago. I sent the email out talking about goals and the importance of having goals and how I love having big goals to continue to work towards. And you responded back that kind of going back in time a little bit when you first started running. You know, and we mentioned it in the intro that you were, you know, a 4+ hour, you know, was your first marathon. And, you said that you set some big goals that others may have considered at that moment to be kind of crazy, kind of outlandish, whatever. And you've chipped away, and I'm assuming that, maybe you've even exceeded some of those goals, but, what has kind of goal setting and the power of setting those big goals that whether people think they're crazy or not, like you believe them and you know, work towards them and find success. What is that kind of, how's that played out in your life, in your running life at least?
Yeah, I really think, it's funny because, you know, I've always had a lot of these goals, you know, to improve my marathon time, but back then, you know, say 2000, or even, yeah, right around that time, there's no way at that weight I was at, the fitness level I was at, that I could ever imagine, you know, being able to run under 3 hours in the marathon, let alone under 3.5. And I think what happened was I just kept setting the short-term goals. And I did that more around 2010 when I got serious about it. You start to see little improvements, and then you start to think about the big picture and what can I do? What, you know, why can't I get to that level of, you know, this master's runner or that runner, you know? And you read some of their stories, and you know, a lot of times some of them came from similar backgrounds. And to me, I think having realistic short-term goals can help you get to what might be an unrealistic long-term goal. Because I really think that 2000, if I had said I was going to run a 2 hour and 47 minute marathon, that was unrealistic.
Right.
But it ended up coming, you know, it happened. But setting realistic short-term goals to get there made the difference, you know. And I think that that's the thing is have, you know, think about things that you want to achieve. Don't put yourself down and, you know, get to the race line with confidence and I'm going to achieve this goal today, because that can push you eventually toward that long-term goal. I still have some outlandish long-term goals that, you know, they might not ever happen, but if I don't have that goal, then I don't know why I would keep pushing these short-term goals of you know, improving incrementally here in the 5K, improving a little bit in the marathon. You know, you kind of have to have those big sort of outlandish goals in your head in order to get better, I think.
Can you are you comfortable sharing your those big outlandish goals still, or are you kind of keeping them close to the vest?
Yeah, I think one of them is it's funny. There's my friend Vernon and I have been running, and we talk about things a lot during our runs, just like we're talking today. And one of the things he's always talked about is, man, you got to get 440s for the mile in your 40s. Mm. And so I'd definitely like to get into the low 440s for the mile. To me, the mile's another one of those fun races that, you know, if you had ever told me I'd be able to run under 5, you know, back in 2000, even 2005, I would have said no way. You know, and then this year I ran my mile PR at 42 years old. Mm-hmm. And so it just, you know, with the training, if you can get into the specific training, you know, things can happen. So, you know, if I run a 4:53 this year, why can't I get down to a 4:45? You know, I mean, it might never happen, but it's, and you know, seconds in a mile is like, you know,
right,
multiple minutes in a marathon. And so it might not sound that outlandish, but 4:45 would be sort of a huge gain from a 4:53. But same thing with the 5K. I'd like to get down into the 16:30s. Mm-hmm. And my PR is a 16:53. So, you know, I'm doing some things, trying to incrementally improve, just to see if I can eventually get there. You know, I've dropped almost 10 pounds since last June, I guess right around June. So trying to get body fat percentage down, weight down, trying to do all the things to get there. I don't know if I will, but, you know, change, you know, I've got a new coach. Maybe it will, you know,
right.
That's the thing is you've got to have those long-term goals and just stay motivated.
Well, and what I've found is that by setting those big goals, like even if you don't quite get it, like even if you don't quite get to 4:45, like that might push you to get to 4:49 or even if it's just 4:51, like, and you don't quite hit the 4:40s, like you still improved, you still got faster. And if you didn't have that big goal, would you have pushed hard to see what was possible? Like who knows?
Right. Exactly. I mean, you've got to, have these exciting goals that you keep working at, you know, because that also helps keep the, you know, the training cycle, more interesting. You know, you're out on your run, you know, why am I doing this? You know, I've got 3 kids. I could be spending this time doing other things, but having those big goals, I think helps with improving the drive, you know, just to continue each run, you know, and have meaning for each run that you go out and have, you know. To me, I think that's the other part of having these big goals.
Yeah, and one thing that you kind of had mentioned, and I want to dial back to, because it was something that I think as I'm kind of examining myself and my goal setting, I think I'm pretty good at setting the big goals and saying, this is where, you know, I want to qualify for Boston. I want to run X number of miles in a year. I want to run a marathon in every state. That's a goal of mine. But where I struggle, I mean, there's nowhere I think that this is definitely where one of the points with goal setting that I really struggle with is those shorter and maybe midterm type of or middle ground type of goals. How for you, how important has those short-term goals, those bite-sized chunks that you can take towards the resolution of the big goal been to you, as maybe that would help motivate me to do a better job of setting some of those, you know, goals for next week, goals for next month, as opposed to just someday I want to, you know, XYZ.
Yeah, I think, you know, setting the short-term goals, you know, it's important because if you look at them incrementally, you're looking at you know, okay, I'm gonna just get a couple more seconds, you know, with my, you know, 800 meter, you know, workout this week, mm-hmm. you know, 10 by 800 meters, or I'm gonna run these hills slightly faster, you know, when you see that you're able to do that, to me, you know, you're getting closer to that long-term goal. There's something exciting about, you know, going out. I have this one hills workout I do. And the summer's heat was so bad this year. But, you know, I found that the first workout was horrible, you know, but I continued working in the heat and I noticed, okay, the coach has increased the number I've done, but I'm keeping the same pace for these hills every time. And I'm feeling better, like I could go faster. You know, there's something rewarding with having that small gain, you know, and you set those goals to achieve it. And when you do, you know, you're getting closer to achieving that bigger, more outlandish mm-hmm. goal. And I think it's that small reward that keeps you going, you know, if you kept failing at these short-term goals, I don't know. It would be difficult to
keep going.
Exactly. You almost would need to find a way to readjust, and sometimes you have to. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had times where I'm stuck in a rut, and I'm running my 5Ks and the 18s again, and I'm like, man, I feel like I'm fit enough to be running 17:30, but something's going on, and then, you know, you kind of have to step back and reset your goals. And then kind of start working toward that long-term goal again. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, the stock market in a way. You know, you're going to have the ups and downs. You're going to slow down. You're going to have cycles where you're just not performing well. And sometimes you need to back off, reassess those short-term goals, you know, set them again, and then keep working toward that long-term goal.
Yeah, and I mean, I think as I'm listening to what you're saying and kind of thinking again, kind of like how I could apply this for myself, it almost, you know, what comes to my mind is almost the like a positive momentum. You know, if you're continuing to hit these small goals, and you don't want to set yourself just gimmies, but also you don't want to set them that they're really 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 difficult. Like they need to be challenging but attainable. It kind of just sets the momentum up for you. So you just have that motivation to keep going, because you're getting that dopamine hit every time you're successful. Like, yeah, I feel good. I accomplished something. And you just keep going, as opposed to like, yeah, I've got this huge goal and eventually I'll get there. And you're missing that continual reinforcement and motivation and encouragement that may just come from having some things written down, or at least, you know, documented somehow that all right, I need to do this to get to step A, to B, to C, to D, to get to the big goal eventually.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. Setting those small achievable goals, just really getting that reward every time you hit those small achievable goals too is kind of what helps eventually get you to that point where you're able to achieve the Boston qualifier. You're, you know, able, you know, one of the things I've done to make trying to qualify for Boston, you know, a goal that I want to continue to go for is, you know, I once had in 2013, the year of the bombing, I had my only wave one Corral one, wave one start, you know, getting to stand right behind the elites. But I had to have surgery that year, and I've never had a wave one corral one since. And so I've got this goal now of, you know, trying to achieve a time where maybe I can get back to wave one corral one. You know, so achieving not only the Boston, but then trying to step it up a little bit to see where I can get with, you know, the corral level. I mean, it's to you know, you kind of have to have these goals to try to, you know, try to achieve. And, you know, I was number 1,003 in the 2015 Boston. So I missed that wave one corral one by like four slots. And it was a killer when I got the number. It was like, oh my gosh, I was, you know, four numbers away from a wave one corral one. And, but it's the same thing with just getting a Boston qualifier in the first place. You know, you've got to set those small achievable goals and then finally get to that time, you know?
I should have brought this up a half an hour ago, and now as we're starting to wind down, but I can't let somebody that has run Boston before go without at least asking a little bit about Boston, because you know, like I just mentioned, that's arguably my biggest running goal. That and the 50 states are kind of 1A, 1B, and depending on the day, depending on the time of year, one is a little bit more you know, in front of the other, but they're the my two biggest running goals, clearly. You know, you've run Boston what, a handful of times, right?
Twice.
Okay, a couple times. What is, and again, I mean, we could have probably spent, I don't know, if I've spent almost a whole episode talking to people about just Boston before. So I you know, we only have so much time left, but what's the Boston Marathon like for you? What's a couple of highlights, or whether it's from your particular races or your times there, or just the event itself? Like I said, I can't let it go without, getting your take on the race itself.
It's the biggest and the best. I mean, there's no experience like it. You know, qualifying for it is amazing. The marathons you run, you know, I enjoyed Steamtown, I enjoyed Savannah, some of the other marathons, but nothing compares to the energy at Boston. You know, even just going to the expo, I mean, the energy level so high. You know, getting to see, you know, people like Mike Wardy, and getting to see some of these elites that are there, you know, talking to these guys, talking to the women that are running, you know, and then knowing that you're running with people who, you know, I think I came in 10th place at one of the Savannahs. You're running with people, you know, that are so fast and so skilled, you know. You get there to the start line, you know, and they march everybody to the start line. And one of the real exciting things I remember from both races is that you're in your corral for a while, and then they bring all the elites up on the side next to you. And then everybody gets so pumped up because they're announcing the elites as they're running by you on the left-hand side, coming up to the elite corral. And you can see, you know, I remember, I think it was 2014, Ryan Hall, Meb, you know, all these people coming up and getting in line. It was the year after the bombing. Mm-hmm. So, even more excitement. Yeah. And then you're running the race. You know, when you go past Wellesley and all the women have their crazy signs up and they're yelling and screaming for you. And some of the signs, you can't even repeat what they say, you know, but then you get down close to Boylston and was it Hereford, and then left on Boylston. Hereford's an interesting street. It's a short little street. You can't see the finish line. I missed my PR in the marathon by 7 seconds at my first Boston. And I think being caught in that sound tunnel is kind of what I call it, because it's so loud. I couldn't even think to calculate where I was in the race because it was so loud. I mean, Hereford's lined with all these people, and then you take the left on Boylston and you see the big blue and gold a finish line and your heart's racing. There's nothing like taking that left turn and seeing that finish line. It's pretty spectacular. And then you're trying to run as fast as you can with whatever muscles are left working for you, to get to that finish line. And 2014 was really exciting because that was the year Shalane was supposed to be pretty much the top chance for an American to win. And I get across the finish line and one of the volunteers was standing there passing things out. And I asked, you know, hey, how did Shalane do? And he said, I don't know, but Meb won, you know. And to hear that, you know, Meb wasn't even supposed to be close. You had Ryan Hall and all these other guys, you know, so to hear that he won the race was just, it was something special, you know, to not only run your first Boston and to miss your PR by 7 seconds, which wasn't too devastating. I wasn't at Boston to run a PR. I knew it was hilly and it was going to be difficult. So I was happy with the time because it was so close. But then to hear that Meb won was like, it was just amazing, you know? And then to have the crowds cheering, you know, to be able to meet up with my wife and my kids afterwards. And, the fact that 2014 went off, you know, without any problems after all the problems that occurred in 2013, it was something special for sure.
Did you, I mean, obviously 7 seconds off your PR, you ran pretty hard. Was there ever any thought of just kind of coasting, relaxing, enjoying yourself, enjoying the experience? Cause that's kind of the argument I have with myself. And obviously I'm still not, I don't have to make that decision just yet, but I feel like when I get there, like, man, I'm going to be, you know, right in front of the sweeper. Like I just taking my sweet time, like enjoying it all, like, you know, just soaking it up.
It's weird. Really the last almost 2 to 3 miles, you've got so many people lining the course that it's hard to slow down because it's almost like getting a second wind, you know, or a hit of caffeine, something, because, you know, I saw some people starting to walk. 2014, it got pretty warm and a lot of people were dehydrated and walking toward the end. And I'm hearing all these people yelling at them to get running, you know, you know, stop walking, get running. And I didn't want to stop. My body was telling me to stop. I was actually at a point where every time I would try to get faster than 6:30, my legs said I could do it. I was dealing with some stomach and other issues. And so every time I would get my pace up faster than 6:30, I would start dry heaving. it was the weirdest thing. I've never experienced it before. So I found that if I stayed right at around 6:30, I could hold that pace and, you know, my stomach wouldn't go too crazy. And that's what I held on to. But, as I was doing that, you'd see some people just stopping to walk and immediately people were yelling at them, you got to get moving. Come on, move, go. So I think coasting would be hard to do because of that energy level and the people yelling for you, you know.
Right.
You might want to and try to enjoy it, but I think you're going to enjoy it no matter what. It's just that last several miles is just amazing. There's no other marathon really that has that many people, you know, cheering at the end and pushing you on.
Yeah, it's, like I said, every time I talk to somebody that's done it, I have to ask, and it's almost always it's something that's almost impossible to put in words. Everybody tries, and I appreciate you. You gave a great synopsis, but I'm sure it's one of those things that, like, almost like a picture, like you can look at a picture and it looks amazing, but until you see it, like, you can't grasp the breadth of it. I'm sure it's kind of the same thing. Like you can explain it the best you can, but until you have a chance to experience it and run it yourself, like, it's just nothing quite paints the picture like being there itself.
Oh, I guarantee you, when, you know, you go down Boylston and you every time you think back to that time, you're going to get chills down your spine. It's that exciting. It's something I'm really, really glad that I, I've done, and I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that first time, whenever that may be. But I'm going to start chunking down some smaller goals and help get there a little bit, maybe not quicker, but a little more strategic than just throwing it out there. So as we're wrapping up, Keith, I'd love to finish with what I've been calling kind of a philosophical question. So something that's a little bit, very open-ended. Some people it's a 2 or 3 word answer, and some people go on for 5-10 minutes, but either way is fine. And it's just kind of something that, I don't know, I stumbled upon doing it and I've enjoyed it. So I kind of keep it going. But, at this point, with 15 plus years of running, and the last handful being fairly competitive for you, kind of at this point in your life, what has running taught you that you're able to use those lessons in other areas of your life that maybe you would have never found out, or would have had a harder time figuring out if you hadn't gotten into running at the point in your life when you did?
I think one of the biggest things has been, it's an interesting question. I'd say for me, running has taught me patience. Mm-hmm. Patience with my kids, patience with my wife. When things aren't going your way, you learn to sort of back off, maybe not get angry about things. I think some of the setbacks I've had with running, some of my injuries have been pretty devastating to the point where I've almost thought about giving up on running. And I think that, you have setbacks like that in life as well. You find out, for running, you find out what that motivation is to stay running, to stay competitive, and you get back at it. And it's the same thing with life. If somebody passes away, if something, some sort of other heartache occurs, to look for the positive. I really think running has mimicked life in that way. There have been a lot of downs, mm-hmm. Dropping out of marathons, having to have sports hernia surgery, other injuries where I've thought, that's it, I'm done. You can do the same thing in life, this job's killing me, or somebody's bringing me down, friend-wise, And then you start to look for the positive and the ways you can fix those things in life, And I think running has helped give me the patience to do that. I really think that's pretty much how life and running for me sort of mimic each other. And I think that's what running has given to me. I would say that before I got competitive and before I started the training, I was a pretty impatient. Mm. I think I had a short fuse. I think now I'm a lot calmer. And I think I can look for the positives and things a lot more now, and try to find ways to fix things without getting angry, mm-hmm. like I used to. I think that's one gift running has really given to me.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. I think that I can relate, and I think that I'm probably not the only one. So beautiful, beautiful perspective, and a great way to kind of wrap this thing up. So I'm not even going to try to add to it. It was perfect. So just thank you, Keith. Guys,
hey,
again, Instagram,
you.
Instagram, Twitter at Keith Freeburn is the place. Connect, say hello, let him know you heard him here, and thank him for taking his time this morning. Keith, man, I'm going to thank you right now. Thank you for taking the time this morning to join us today. It was definitely a pleasure. Lots of things that I felt like we could have gotten into and we just never made it to. And that's all right. That's the nature of this show. And that's one of the things I love about it. But thanks for joining us today. And obviously, all the best. Have a great race coming up in, it'll be just a few weeks really, in Savannah.
Yeah.
And continued success, the rest of this year and beyond, and go get some of those big goals, and can't wait to follow along and hear how they go, and maybe we'll circle back up at some point and do this again at some point.
That would be great. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, and good luck to you as well with your, quest for Boston and getting to 50 states, keep those goals and go for them.
All righty, Keith. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Take care.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Keith and myself. And as always, I'd love to know what stood out to you from this particular episode. What made you scratch your head? What made you stop and think? What made you even rewind and listen to it again so that you could kind of let something sit in a little bit? For me, I think it kind of goes back to the beginning of the episode, although there were several things that we talked about that I could have chosen from, because there were definitely several things that I took away from this episode. But the biggest one for me was that idea of using the 5K to predict your marathon. As I said when we were talking, you know, I'm not the biggest fan I'm pretty skeptical, if you really want to be honest, of the idea that you can go to a you know, marathon predictor or a race calendar predictor thing online and say, I ran, you know, X time in the 5K and this is what I should be able to run in the marathon. I don't think those things are accurate really at all. I don't put a whole lot of stock into them. If that's your thing and it seems to work for you, whatever, but it doesn't, I can't wrap my head around that idea. Yet when we talked about that, and when Keith was talking about how his 5K race performance helps him to know if he's on track for his marathon training, that really got me thinking a little bit. And I've been wrestling with it for the week and a half or so that it's been since we recorded this episode, that maybe I need to either race the 5K more often, or at least do some time trials for myself of 5K type of distance, that even though it's going to hurt, and even though, you know, I've set up, down, and sideways how much I dislike the 5K, maybe there is a benefit for the longer races to doing some more focused and more short speed work. And I don't know. I mean, it's something that I'm still wrestling with, but it was a big thing that, you know, as we were talking and as I've gone back through it again, you know, prior to releasing the episode, that it stuck out to me both times. And so, you know, when something like that happens, I tend to look into it a little bit, and you know, I've even done some quarter mile repeats since then. I did a mile time trial the other day, so clearly, maybe that's something that I need to add into my training. I don't know, but always learning, always evolving, and that's one of the cool things that I get from talking to these folks, is that I can stretch my thoughts a little bit, and hopefully that's something that you do when you listen to these episodes as well. So that was my takeaway. I'd love to hear what it was for you. What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head to the show notes for this episode and leave a comment there. That way others can see it as well. DizRuns.com/234. And I'd love to know what you think. What stood out to you from this episode? I always love getting those notes, and hopefully you'll keep them coming. So with that, let's wrap this thing up. Don't forget to check out Knuckle Lights if you're so interested, and shoot them a message and let them know that you appreciate them sponsoring the show. It's certainly helps keep the lights on here. No pun intended there. But they really are a great product, and I would definitely encourage you to check them out. Knucklelights.com is the website. So with that, thanks for listening, guys. I appreciate you. I hope you have a great rest of the day, and look forward to talking to you guys again real soon. But until then, take care, guys.